Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I am Mike Spofford, and he is Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, we might as well start with what is on everybody's mind, and that is the status of Aaron Rodgers. And, unfortunately, at the time we are taping this episode, we do not have an answer. Mike McCarthy told us late in the day on Monday at his press conference that all of the scans and tests on Aaron Rodgers' surgically repaired broken collarbone have been taken and distributed to some various medical experts who are going to weigh in on just where he stands. And now it's just a waiting game to find out what the final decision is going to be.
Wait and see for the Green Bay Packers and to some extent the Carolina Panthers for which quarterback they'll be seeing on Sunday. I'll say this, out of the entire press conference, I think the thing that stood out to me the most is Mike McCarthy referencing the 2013 season and saying that they've handled this a lot better than they did back then. I think that that's a true assessment. That they, by putting him on injured reserve, it removed this this week-to-week sort of narrative that I think sort of surfaced in 2013. You were allowed to focus. The team was able to focus on who the quarterback was going to be.
Right.
Rodgers was able to focus on just getting healthy because there was a timeline there. Well, we're reaching the end of the timeline from that regard in terms of the injured reserve designation. Whether he plays, whether he doesn't play, it's going to be something that'll be a conversation all week long at 1265 Lombardi Avenue. But more than anything else, Mike, I think the fact that we're even talking about this being relevant, talking about the season still being in play, the postseason being in play, this is, maybe you wanted a couple more victories here and there, but this is what the Packers were hoping for when Aaron Rodgers went down in Minnesota.
Yeah, it was all about staying alive and giving yourself an opportunity for when your fearless leader, as I like to call him, comes back. And it really does just come down to the medical tests. Mike McCarthy said it's going to be a medical decision because everything else is in place. The Packers are still in the hunt. Everything about Aaron Rodgers' rehab has gone very well, off the charts, according to what we've heard from Mike McCarthy. He's been back in practice. He did a whole week of running the scout team in the Packers' preparation for the Cleveland Browns game. So everything is there. There aren't any other questions except what does the bone look like? And but at the end of the day, as Mike McCarthy said, the Packers are not going to do anything that would risk Aaron Rodgers' health. It's about what the medical experts are going to say about the healing process of that bone and where it is. And at this point, the Packers are just waiting for the decision. I would imagine the coaches are planning a little bit for Carolina for the two different scenarios as to which quarterback it'll be.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy said Dr. McKenzie is the one that's sort of the point person on this. It's not just his decision. They're collecting a lot of outside opinions. As he said, the experts will be the ones that will weigh in on this matter and make an educated decision, not only for Aaron Rodgers, the football player, but more importantly, Aaron Rodgers, the person. And the other thing he said about 2013, they learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, McKenzie learned a lot in terms of how Rodgers heals and what his process is like in that regard. And it allowed them to get him back on the field and in a game that was a do-or-die, win-or-go-home playoff NFC North Championship contest against the Chicago Bears. And we all know how that ended with the touchdown pass to Randall Cobb.
Right.
Whether or not there'll be those heroics, again, that decision will be made here. But I think the thing that the Packers take a lot of solace in is they've been through this before. They know, not that you ever want to go through a second collarbone injury, but they understand what this is going to be like for Aaron Rodgers, the challenges that he's going to face coming back. And as you also said, Mike, he's gotten a lot of practice. I mean, he was able to run the scout team. He's been throwing for weeks now, really what appears to be uninhibited. So from that regard, he looks like Aaron Rodgers. It's just a question of whether or not he can be that player on the field without an over-the-top, more-than-usual risk of injury.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's a question that I think we're getting it from some fans in our Insider Inbox column. What exactly are the Panthers doing? What do they do in terms of preparation? My personal opinion, if I'm Ron Rivera, if I'm on the Carolina Panthers coaching staff, I am preparing all out for Aaron Rodgers to be the opposing quarterback. And this is no slight against Brett Hundley, but if I'm the Panthers, I prepare all week for Aaron Rodgers. And if Brett Hundley ends up being the quarterback, then you just adjust and you play the ball game. Because to me, it's almost like stepping into the batter's box against Aroldis Chapman and looking for a breaking ball. I mean, yeah. When you step in against Aroldis Chapman, you look for a fastball. Right. In this situation, if you're going to take the field against the Green Bay Packers, you need to be prepared for Aaron Rodgers, and you adjust from there. That's my opinion.
And you know how this game works too, Mike. These guys, it isn't just, okay, you play the game on Sunday, and then you just start all your preparation for the next team. You haven't looked at any film. You don't know anything about them beforehand. No, I mean, these guys are doing their preliminary studies and getting their information and start forming those game plans from the start. You've had 7 weeks to look at Brett Hundley, and you have to imagine that they've kept an eye on him and seen the successes and seen the falters at times. Aaron Rodgers is the exception. He is the 1%. I mean, he is the best player in the National Football League and consistently a guy that can hurt you in a number of different ways. So if you have that monster potentially lurking behind all of this, you have to be ready to combat it. Ron Rivera, they've seen Aaron Rodgers before. There's been some great matchups between him and Cam Newton in the past.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not that ends up coming to fruition on Sunday, we'll have to see. But by no means can you go into this thing and not have number 12 on your mind. He has to be the focal point.
Yep. And with that, we will toss to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, for all the talk, and we spent a good portion of yesterday's show talking about the dramatic fourth quarter comeback, the win in overtime, obviously how important it was to the Packers season. Mike McCarthy deals in reality, and he stood at the podium on Monday and said he did not like the way his team played. The coaches went through the film. He called it some rough meetings in the film room with regards to the mental errors that they saw, just the mistakes that obviously helped to create that 21-7 deficit that they had to come back from. And I think, just my personal opinion, not having studied every snap of the film, but I think the rushing offense and the rushing defense in particular, I think, are some areas where Mike McCarthy was talking about some of those mental errors that really started to pile up and hurt this team.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, as great as that victory was and as dramatic as those final 5-6 minutes were of regulation and into the overtime period, the Packers were playing a winless opponent. And I know a lot of people in Insider Inbox have brought that up. You cannot take any victory for granted. We talked about it last week, Mike. You can't take any opponent for granted.
No.
But there is an understanding, I think, there from Mike McCarthy and his coaching staff that this team has to play better now. Aaron Rodgers or no Aaron Rodgers, you have some talented playoff contenders coming up with Carolina, Minnesota at home, and then even going back into Detroit, depending on where the Lions are going to be at. You know, they're still in the playoff hunt as well. So, yeah, there are a lot of things they have to clean up. You look at, and obviously nobody was out there to throw anybody under the bus, but you know the Brett Hundley 4th-and-1 play where Aaron Jones is going out for what appears to be a toss, and Hundley's looking behind him. Edgar Bennett just said that he wouldn't say exactly if it was a communication error, but basically the play that went into the huddle didn't go in as it was supposed to.
Yeah,
and that was just one small illustration. So basically, the thing I took away from this, Packers showed a lot of poise, a lot of moxie, a lot of grit in the end of that game. But one of the reasons they had to is because some of those errors throughout the game put them in that situation where their back was kind of against the wall.
Yeah, and I will say this about the 4th-and-1 play that you mentioned with Brett Hundley at the 10-yard line there. He did take it upon himself in the post-game press conference. He said that was my mistake. It was a mental error on my part. And we talked a lot over the last 2 months about Brett Hundley needing to come back from mistakes, to rally, to rise up from some down moments. I think bouncing back from that failed 4th-and-1, given the situation and that it was 14-7 at the time, it obviously stayed 14-7 with the failed play and the Browns drive the other way to make it 21-7. For Brett Hundley to bounce back from that moment in that game with the season on the line and everything as we've talked about, I think it was his most impressive bounce back moment, because when you think back to, say, the game against Baltimore when he started with 2 interceptions on the first 2 drives, he didn't exactly bounce back from it, and the Packers ended up with no points on the scoreboard. This was a really interesting moment, I thought, for a young quarterback.
Yeah, it's a great point you make, Mike, and you obviously have mentioned that earlier this week as well. I think that was one of your big overriding themes coming out of that game, is how he sort of showed a lot of resiliency in response to adversity. The thing I really like, and Edgar Bennett, the offensive coordinator, did touch on this Monday, is the fact that what are the two things the Packers preach the most about? It's start and finish. And Brett Hundley, I almost said Brett Hart there for a second, the hitman. Brett Hundley got off to such a great start in a lot of these games, and he finished really strong on Sunday against the Cleveland Browns. I don't know what the exact stats are, but if you look at his passer rating from that first quarter and fourth quarter and overtime, I'd have to say it's through the roof, even though he finished with 111. So, I mean, for him to be able to find those moments, and that was a big moment, Michael. They could have kicked a field goal there. They could have cut into the deficit. They didn't do that. They got a big, lengthy drive that they really needed, and they didn't get any points on it.
Right.
But instead of kind of clamming up, turtling up, going into a shell, Brett Hundley just responded. And I thought the play calling was exceptionally smart in this game. I like the underneath stuff. I like the quick rhythm throws. It allowed Hundley to get into a rhythm, and it allowed those Packers perimeter weapons that we've talked about for so much these past couple weeks, Mike, to really make plays like Devontae Adams did on that 25-yard touchdown.
Yeah, but as you said, and as we started the segment, you know, the coaches are really focused on some of the mental errors they saw on film, and these are the kinds of things. The Packers have gone through lulls in these games. These last two overtime victories, Tampa Bay, Cleveland, you know, offensive lulls in particular, which then have led to some defensive struggles when the offense isn't moving the ball and giving the defense enough rest. It definitely plays hand in hand with this team. These are the types of lulls the Packers have to avoid, because Carolina, Minnesota, these teams at the top of the NFC, those momentum swings, sometimes you're not going to get a chance to get it back. You can get it back against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Cleveland Browns of the world. The Packers didn't get it back against the New Orleans Saints, for example, you know, a couple of months ago. There's a reason they didn't get it back against the New Orleans Saints. It's because of what type of team that is, and those are the type of teams the Packers have to play going forward.
And now, the other thing to keep in mind, too, Packers, again, have finished really strong. As I just said, I think they have over 100 points this year in the fourth quarter. One of the other league leaders in that category are the Carolina Panthers. They've been a team, I think, when you look at Cam Newton throughout the course of the game, how he's gotten stronger. And I mean, there have been some big ebb and flows to his game this year, but he's running a lot. It's going to be his most rushing yards since 2012 this season, assuming he stays healthy the rest of the way. And when he needs to make the big play, he makes it. That is going to be the difference in this one. DeShone Kizer had a better game than I think a lot of us expected. But there is another world out there when you're looking at Newton and Matthew Stafford, depending on what his situation is by the end of the month. Those are the elite quarterbacks that you have to watch out from, and a lot of times they don't give you that chance to come back.
Yeah, no question about it. With that, we're going to toss it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford right here. Wes Hodkowitz all the way over there. Wes, we brought up Cam Newton, obviously, in the last segment, and that's who the Packers are going to have to deal with on Sunday in Charlotte. And this Packers defensive backfield continues to take the hits on the injury front. I will say this, though. The fact that Mike McCarthy told us on Monday that Devon House would be challenged to be able to play this week, but the fact that the Packers are not ruling him out for the season after what looked like a pretty painful back injury that he was dealing with as he was carted off the field in Cleveland, I think that's good news. The Packers will have a chance to get Devon House back at some point, but you're still dealing with a secondary that's pretty banged up, and a big spotlight here is going to be on Demaryius Randle and Josh Hawkins, especially if Devon House can't play in Charlotte.
Yeah, and it's funny when Mike, you know, obviously says that Devon House will be challenged for this game. I mean, keep in mind, in addition to the back, he was doubtful for that last game with the shoulder.
Yeah, just the fact that he got out there anyway.
So it's not like he just plays in that game and then the shoulder miraculously heals. There's that to consider as well. He's had lower body injuries this year. I asked Morgan Burnett about this after the game, what Devon House has meant to this team this year. You know, right from the get-go, Joe Witt discussed how, you know, he really has provided a nice veteran presence that room really honestly lacked. Mm-hmm. In the absence of Tremont Williams and a lot of those veterans having to go younger that they have in recent years. So at the same time, not having him on the field leaves a big hole. And Josh Hawkins has gotten a lot of playing time this year. That's a big opportunity for him, assuming House does not play in this game with that back injury. Hawkins, actually, I think if I'm correct here, Mike, and I know you'll stop me if I'm wrong, I think is actually leading the Packers right now in passes deflected, passes defense this
I actually
season.
Haven't checked that chart
I think
in a while, but
he's at least leading the cornerbacks in that category.
Okay.
And he has those his arms are just so darn long. I mean, I think it's like 32 and a half inch arms. And he said, I remember talking to him in the preseason about that, about how when he went to college, I believe it was Eastern Carolina, you know, first thing that happened, the coaches talked to him and he was going to be a running back. He's doing all these things. He's like, they looked at those arms. They're like, you're going to be a cornerback.
Yeah, you got to play defense.
And he's
yeah.
incredibly fast. It's one of the reasons why the Packers kept him as an undrafted rookie last year. There's confidence in him. He's had a lot of playing time. And if House isn't available, we know that on Tuesday, Kevin King had his surgery on his shoulder. He's out for the season on injured reserve. Demetri Goodson might not be available because of the hamstring injury. A lot of this might be on Josh Hawkins, and he has to be ready for that.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see as the week goes along if Demetri Goodson perhaps is going to be available. There's also two undrafted rookie cornerbacks in Lindsey Pipkins and Donatello Brown who are on the active roster right now. Pipkins has really only played on defense against Minnesota in right. the road game, I believe, the day that Rodgers got hurt. Otherwise, if he's been active, he's really only been playing on special teams. And same with Donatello Brown at this point, has been basically a special teams player. The Packers have been using their safeties like Jermaine Whitehead as a slot cornerback at times. We talked about Morgan Burnett playing slot corner. You've also got Marwin Evans as another option at safety who could work into a 6 DB dime pack. Package, depending on how the Packers want to attack this, but it's becoming a mix and match type of thing for Dom Capers, just based on who's available and who do we think can do what, and the way things look, it's almost a given that Demarius Randall is going to take whoever the number one target is. You start there, and then you build the rest of the secondary around it.
Yeah, and Randall has done such a great job, particularly since this bye week, of really being able to become a lockdown player in that secondary, and they've needed him to be, Mike. I mean, you look at 2 weeks ago, DeSean Jackson, one of the fastest receivers in the NFL. The Packers have been seeing him for a number of years and know what he can do to a defense, the big plays that he can create. Then you have Josh Gordon last week. The Packers start off with some of those zone concepts. Gordon's finding the soft cushion in the secondary there, has two big, long, productive plays. Then they start matching a little bit more in man coverage with Demarius Randall and are able to contain him the rest of the way. A credit to him, a credit to how he's bounced back. It's been an up and down season for him, but it's mostly been up here over the last 2 months.
I would agree.
And considering everything that's happened with these cornerbacks, Mike, and Dom Capers, remember last Thursday when he was talking to the media, he was even asked if he remembers having anything quite like this in terms of the injuries and the scale of which they've had over the last two seasons at the cornerback position, and Capers couldn't even really recall another incident like this. The fact that Demarius Randall has played in every game, and he's had some bumps and bruises along the way, but the fact that he's been out there and made as many starts as he's had, as many snaps as he's given the secondary, you can't say enough about it.
Yeah, you look at where the Packers are right now, and this is just reality. You went into the season thinking that in whatever order you want to put them in, your top four cornerbacks were going to be Kevin King, Devon House, Demarius Randall, and Quentin Rollins. Now you are going into Carolina on the road against a team that is a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Your season is on the line, and it's quite likely that three of those four guys, if House is not available, the other two are on IR, three of those four guys won't be available. You've got Demarius Randall, and you're piecing it together after that. That's not an easy situation to deal with.
It really isn't, and it's funny because if I'm the Packers personnel department, if I'm any of these defensive coaches, you just have to think. I mean, lightning can't strike twice, can it? I mean, you get as banged up as you did a year ago.
Right.
It happens. We saw it happen with the offensive line last year to some extent. You see it happen this year, but for the most part, the scale, the number of season-ending injuries at that position. I know there was that one snap, I think, that some of the injured reserve guys sent out of them at a local basket. I think it was one of the basketball games, maybe the Chicago Bulls game last week when the Packers were on the road, because a lot of times those IR guys won't travel. It was like four or five guys that are all dealing between the safeties and cornerback positions. So they have to knock on wood that things can get better and maybe be able to get us, you know, some help with this. But it's been quite the ride for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. With that, we'll go to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, quickly before we go, one defensive player that probably deserves a little bit more mention than maybe we gave him in our Monday wrap-up show, and that's Clay Matthews, and I'm not just talking about what he did against the Browns in terms of that final play in overtime, helping to force that interception, but we're seeing a big-time defensive player really coming on strong here late in the season, making a lot of key plays for this Packers defense, and Green Bay needs him to keep it up.
Yeah, they really do. And here's the thing, Mike. I know Clay Matthews wants to play in every game. I know that he obviously doesn't want to miss time, but a part of me does wonder if that Pittsburgh Steelers game, missing, you know, not testing anything, not straining his groin at all after injuring, you know, having that injury against Baltimore, might have been to his benefit. Because think about this, Michael. He has 5 sacks now in basically just over 2 games and maybe a quarter. I think there was 13 snaps before he had to come out against Baltimore, and he did have a sack in that game as well. I think we're seeing the best Clay Matthews right now. I think you're seeing a guy that is infecting games. And certainly the pass rush needs to ramp it up here. Everybody understands that. Everybody's been very upfront about that. But this is the Clay Matthews they need. The guy that showed up at the end of that game, it wasn't a sack, but it might have been the biggest play of his season so far. Yep. To be able to sustain the pressure on DeShone Kizer, not allow a guy with that much speed and athleticism to evade him, and being able to get his hand on that arm to pop up that football. We might not be talking right now about the Packers' playoff chances if it wasn't for that play.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And kind of a funny story from a statistical standpoint, there was a change from the Tampa Bay game. Matthews, at the end of the game, was credited with 2.5 sacks. There was a statistical analysis of it, and he was actually given another half a sack in that mix, so that became a 3-sack game. But he'd gotten a game ball from the coaching staff that said 2.5 sacks, so now he wants to like send it back and have it redone.
Yeah, you got to get that one redone. There was that combo sack he had with Kenny Clark. Originally, they gave it all to Clark. Upon review, he gets a half of that. A 3-sack game for him, his biggest performance, I think, in a single game statistically in 4 years. So an amazing job by him on that. And he did joke that, he'll need a new game ball now because of it.
Yeah, and he put on his dad's jersey, dad's Browns jersey after the last game, and good luck to his father in the quest for the Hall of Fame. But we've got to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.